Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is Money Talking from WNYC. Good morning, I'm Charlie Herman. Perhaps you've been hearing a lot of buzz recently about the digital currency Bitcoin. There have been reports about stores in the New York City area accepting Bitcoins as payments. Then there's the Bitcoin Center, perhaps the first in the world, that just opened a few feet away from the New York Stock Exchange. And next week, New York's Department of Financial Services is holding 2 days of hearings about how to regulate the virtual currency. Now, just a quick review. Bitcoin is this digital currency that lets people send payments to one another without having to go through a bank or a credit card company. And if you're asking yourself right now, how much attention should I really pay to this? Well, with me to answer that question, regular contributors Joe Nocera with The New York Times and Rana Faruhar with Time Magazine. And Joe, how seriously should we be taking this? Do consumers really need to pay attention when they hear the word Bitcoin?
I think they do. It is the first digital currency to really hit in any way. And the lack of a digital currency has been a friction on the internet for over a decade now. It would be so much easier if you could buy and sell things digitally with a currency that didn't rely on calling in a credit card or credit card fraud.
What's the benefit, though? If I can put in my credit card number and pay for that item on Amazon, what's the benefit of using Bitcoin?
Well, part of the benefit is you eliminate credit card fraud. Another is that it has a lot of attributes of cash. You know, you want to pay for a small thing or you go back and forth. The problem with Bitcoin right now is that it's produced in such a limited amount that there's an enormous speculative frenzy over it. So it really
– So we're seeing the price. That's right, why we see the prices wildly fluctuate.
If you look at a chart of the Bitcoin prices, it looks like the Rocky Mountains. I mean, it's really – it just goes crazy.
Well, Rana, you know, we like to throw around words like disruptive when we talk about tech. You look at Uber and cars or Airbnb and hotels. So is Bitcoin going to upend the way that we use banks, the way we use money?
I don't think that it's going to become a global currency like the dollar or the euro for part of the reasons that Joe said. There's only a limited supply of it. And for a currency to really become a global currency, something that stocks are traded in, that debt is denominated in, that sovereigns use as a reserve currency, you have to have it guaranteed by a central bank. And part of the problem is that the value of Bitcoin fluctuates so much, as Joe said, because there's really nobody controlling the value. It's risen 100 times over the past year. There's a limited supply. But what I do think it signifies is a disruptive idea. And I think it points to the fact that commerce is global and life is global, but currencies are not global. The way we bank and the way we use money is actually very old-fashioned.
The paradox of Bitcoin is if it were to really take off as an alternate currency, you would need some form of central banker. You would need somebody to stabilize the value, so it wouldn't have these wild ups and downs, and so people could count on it having a value. The flip side, though, is that part of the appeal, certainly among the tech world, is that there is no central banker. It's very libertarian. We don't even know who invented it. It's a pseudonym.
Good point.
It's kind of a mystery currency, and that's one of the things that the tech people really love about
it. So the very idea of stepping in and trying to regulate it, put in consumer protections, make sure it doesn't fluctuate wildly, we'll just turn it into any other type of currency.
And so the fact that the New York State is going to hold 2 days of hearings about it has to send shivers up the spine of everybody who really does love Bitcoin. I also saw something in the American Banker the other day that said that some people were exploring the idea of FDIC insurance for Bitcoin, which, of course, if you did that, it would go away.
Why does Bitcoin have any value whatsoever? If it's electronic, why is Bitcoin valued at, say, $1,000?
Because people view it as valued as $1,000. Why does a piece of green paper with a 5 on it, why is that worth $5? For the same reason. Money is as psychological as it is physical. And if people believe that that a yellow stone called gold has enormous value, then it has enormous value. One way to think about Bitcoin, in fact, is that it's a little more resembles silver and gold than it does dollars and $5 and $10, in the sense that it does fluctuate, but it does have this value at any given moment. And, you know, if you have gold, you can trade it for things.
You know, the fact that it's so emotional is a warning sign, because it means that if people lose trust in its value, it could decline precipitously very quickly.
So then, Rana, yes or no, is it a fad? Is it a bubble?
I think it'll continue to be used for electronic commerce. I don't think it's going to become a global currency.
Joe?
I think it's not a fad, but it is a bubble.
Okay.
And the price needs to stabilize before it really does something important.
Well, let's take a look to some of the issues that are coming up in the next couple of weeks. Joe, what are you paying attention to?
Well, I am watching the fabulous Fab once again, Fabrice Touré. He is the Goldman Sachs executive who was found liable in a case the SEC brought over the infamous Abacus deal.
The mortgage-backed securities and selling them to investors.
Right. This week, he's going to be sentenced very soon. And this week, his legal team put in their brief and the SEC put in theirs. The SEC says he should give $1 million. The fine should be $1 million. He says it should be $65,000. I just want to say for the record, I'm actually sympathetic to him in this. I know that there hasn't been a lot of punishment meted out through the financial crisis, but this is the low man on the totem pole, and he really was the scapegoat in this deal.
Rana, what are you paying attention to?
Well, I've been fascinated from afar by Carl Icahn pressing eBay for a PayPal spinoff and board seats. And, I did a cover on Carl Icahn a couple of months ago. And I think that he really is a canary in the coal mine in terms of shareholder activism. I think that you're going to see shareholders and raiders, someone call them like this, continue to press for board control. And that this debate over who really owns companies and gets to tell them what to do is going to continue to heat up in the next few weeks and months.
Well, we'll be watching those stories and all the week's financial news at WNYC.org. And if you want to know more about Bitcoin, well, we've got a list of stories, resources, answers to questions that you didn't even know you wanted to have answered at the website for this show, moneytalking.org. There you can also sign up for the podcast. And while you're there, let us know what topics you think we should cover next. As always, Jonah Serra with The New York Times and Rana Fruhar with Time Magazine. Thanks for joining.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Charlie Herman. This is Money Talking from WNYC.